Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, July 16th. This year, with the Juneteenth federal holiday and a greater national focus on the anniversary of the Tulsa race massacre, more Americans have been getting more familiar with the history of slavery and the amount of money plundered in that context from black families over the centuries. Well, now, Reuters is reporting that the nation of Jamaica is preparing a petition to Queen Elizabeth for the UK to pay around $10 billion in reparations for some of the financial effects of slavery there. The UK ruled Jamaica in the colonial era. Independence only came in the 1960s. So what might reparations from the UK to Jamaicans look like? And could this process offer any kind of a model for the United States? With me now is Selwyn Kudjoe, professor of Africana Studies and Comparative Literature at Wellesley. He has been chair of the History of Ideas at Wellesley and, among other things, a director of the Central Bank of Trinidad and Tobago. Professor Kudjoe, we appreciate your time for this today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, Brian, thank you for having me back again. It's lovely to be on with you.
Can we use this opportunity to go over some history first that many listeners may not know, such as, we know 1619 in this country much better now as the year of the arrival of the first enslaved people, thanks to Nicole Hannah-Jones. Who brought the first enslaved people to Jamaica and when?
Well, certainly the British are the ones who brought them into Jamaica as part of their plans to sort of utilize the sugar industry to enhance their wealth in their country. As a matter of fact, a lot of the people in England lived off the profits from slavery. As a matter of fact, in 1776, 40 members of the British Parliament were making their money from the investments in the Caribbean. And of course, we can't forget Haiti, which of course was the richest country in the British in the Western Hemisphere. Not only inaugural brought an end of slavery, but in fact, the people who in fact were being enslaved and being ripped off by the French, who had then paid him monies just to recognize their independence. Of course, remember Jefferson refused to do that about 1823. So it's been a long history. But in terms of Jamaica, I think they're coming into Jamaica was about around the 18th century.
And as a benchmark for paying reparations to descendants of enslaved people in Jamaica, and this is going to blow people's minds if they haven't heard it before, the Reuters story notes that the UK actually paid reparations to slaveholders to compensate them for their losses when the UK abolished slavery in Jamaica in 1834. Do you know that to be true?
Well, it is a fact, in point of fact, that they borrowed the money, I think, from the Rothschild Bank. It was about, I think, at that time, about 25% of the British, of the budget of Britain at the time, and they paid them very handsomely. I think they just finished paying in 2015. So the British the Parliament borrowed very heavily and paid the slave masters about £20 million, which would be about $100 billion today. In fact, for getting rid of, in compensation for their property. So we were never seen as people, we were seen as property. And in lieu of setting these enslaved people free, that of course Britain paid a tremendous amount of money. I think it must have been about a fifth of the national budget of Britain at the time. So yes, but of course we, and it is part of the petition that is being made, that be the sons and daughters of slavery never got a cent from that. Even poor Haiti was made to pay back the French for the question of recognizing their independence.
Professor Kudjoe, go ahead. You want to make a point? Go ahead, sure.
I want to make one point, is that the notion that reparations should have been paid because none of us are directly descended from slaves and could trace their line is not entirely true. I am from Trinidad, I grew up on the estate, my family, of the biggest, one of the biggest slaveholders in the Caribbean, William Hardin Burnley. I've just finished a book about 2 years ago on the slave master Trinidad. And we lived on that plantation from the inception of 1834, my great-great-grandfather was born, and we could trace his lineage in that same village. So there's a direct connection in terms of our being ripped off and exploited by these masters. So just a personal note, you call for personal stories. In my book, The Slave Master of Trinidad, I sort of speak about that early slave master who, of course, was on the largest plantation. I grew up with a big house. Mm-hmm. In my very sight every day. So sorry about that. But I thought
I apologize.
Personal connection.
That I wasn't aware of your book to bring the title. So why don't you say it again? So now that people are getting to know you by this interview, they know what your book is?
My last book is called The Slave Master of Trinidad, William Hardin Burnley and the 19th Century Atlantic World. And he was one of the biggest slaveholders. He got some of the most money that Britain compensated in the British Caribbean, not just in Trinidad or Jamaica, but the entire Caribbean. So again, the book is The Slave Master of Trinidad, William Hardin Burnley and the 19th Century Atlantic World, published by University of Massachusetts Press.
Thank you. So who will decide on this claim? The Queen herself, Boris Johnson, someone else? Do you know?
Well, the Queen is just a figurehead. I mean, it's a question of the Parliament, UK Parliament. Now, they're willing to say, and of course, even the Queen or the Prime Minister, I think, when we spoke last time, I think it was Mayor Ben Cameron who had gone down there. They said, yes, we acknowledge, we're sorry. But nobody could say officially because that means that it makes you liable. So yes. The people who make that decision is the British Parliament. And they're the ones to decide. And of course, there have been large debates there, but no one is prepared to do that. One good example is what happened in terms of Namibia, where they put forward, I think Germany put forward $1.3 billion for the genocide that took place in Namibia over the years. In point of fact, about 1970 or so, 78, I interviewed Sam Nujoma, who was the former president of Namibia. He had come to the United Nations Decolonization Committee to even begin to plead for freedom. At that time, they were under the direct hands of the Germans. And the Germans themselves, about I think sometime earlier this year, put out about $1.3 billion for what they called the harm that they had done. They were responsible for the colonial, they themselves acknowledged they were responsible for the colonial genocide that took place in that country. And they paid something like $1.3 billion in aid for the country, having that sum would serve as, quote unquote, a gesture of recognition for the immeasurable suffering the people of Namibia underwent. I think the British did the same thing in Kenya, when, for example, they had to pay the descendants of the Mau Mau for what they'd done. So the legislature, is the British Parliament, are the ones who must do it. The Queen is simply a figurehead in all of this.
Yes. Let's take a phone call. Someone with a family story, I do believe. Terry in Mount Vernon. You're on WNYC. Hi, Terry.
Hey. Quick story. So my grandmother's great, so that's going to make it my great-great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
She was part of the last slaves that came over from to the island from West Africa, the Ivory Coast. And the stories that she told about how she told my grandmother, because it's a past on oral history, how she got captured, how her treatment while she was on the island before the abolition of slavery, and it was horrifying. And it gets here to speak about it, and whenever I hear about it. So yeah, it is a deep, rich history.
What is it
of slaves and?
What does it make you think, Terry, that justice would look like in financial terms, and how that money might be distributed or used?
I mean, it could be used to develop the island a little better, but there is never a price on humanity. You understand? You can never pay for the atrocities that you've done to millions of people. But then something has to give. Like, the island is in a shambles because of that, I think. I don't know.
Terry, thank you so much for your call and sharing your story. I really, really appreciate it. And so, Professor Cudjoe, $10 billion, as this reported petition will claim, for Jamaica. It's pegged to the amount in today's dollars paid to those former slaveholders, I understand. But in today's dollars, it's actually not that much money. The New York City budget alone just for this year is $100 billion. But then again, the population of Jamaica is only around 3 million people, New York City, 8 million. But we're talking about compensation for hundreds of years of financial plunder. So is it clear how it would work, or do you have an opinion about how it would work best?
Well, I think the way it would work best, I think the last speaker alluded to the fact that Jamaica right now, and the entire Caribbean, while Jamaica has led the fight, remember CARICOM, on the Sir Hilary Beckles about 10 years ago, petitioned the European Parliament, the European nations, for reparations. So that part of the problem is that Jamaica, Trinidad, Guyana, St. Lucia, all these countries are under tremendous strain from the virus, for example, in terms of poverty, in terms of education, in terms of health. And so why we don't necessarily expect that we would get direct payments, even though that'd be a great thing, that their systems, their infrastructure needs as much help as they can. A place like Jamaica depends almost entirely on monies being sent on tourism. I think they made about $1 billion over the last 6 months on tourism. But there's no infrastructure. I mean, years ago they had bauxite, but there are no natural resources. And so these countries, in terms of simply infrastructure, in terms of their health services, in terms of their schooling, in terms of the whole question of joblessness, we see what's happening in South Africa right now. Then, of course, these countries are structurally weak. And, of course, these are the areas in which I think that reparations, in terms of repairing the wrong, as the sister said a few minutes ago, there's no monetary kind. You can't reduce lives to monetary, but it's a good indicator of how you can better the lives of those who are wrong. So I think it's in those kinds of social services, in terms of poverty, homelessness, etc., that we could, of course, begin to pour monies into, as I said, as Germany is trying to do in Namibia for the horrible genocide that took place there. So I think it's in these areas of social services and health that we could begin to repair the wrong that has been done over lots of centuries. As to your point, in terms of the budget of New York, remember that New York was sold, I think it's the Suriname, for about, $25 at a time when these countries were producing, places like Barbados, that they were producing much more than many of the states here. So the fact of the matter just simply compounded, and we begin to understand how much monies have been lost. And in terms of the amount, in fact, the Jamaicans, in terms of the Rastafarians, in fact, were demanding in 1961 something like, I think, $72 billion was never listened to. And by the way, I was suggesting, and you may not be able to get it, but I was suggesting that perhaps we could, I mean, a guy like Jimmy Cliff, I love that song by the Rivers of Babylon, in terms of the How They Become, might be one reason to, you know, to think about the fact that we've been asking for these reparations for a long time. And I don't know if you know the song, but just the lyrics by the River of Babylon, where we sat down and then we wept when we remember Zion, for the wicked carried us away in captivity, required from us a song. How can we sing King Alpha's song in a strange land? So this kind of petition has been going on for a long time. Completely, not just only exploitation, which has to do with the question of labor, stealing of labor power, but alienation, a separation of the self from one's essence, the complete fragmentation of the self, as someone like Fanon would speak about. So, I mean, the danger and the damage goes very, very deeply.
Jennifer, in Barbados, or originally from Barbados. Jennifer, you're on WNYC. Hello.
No.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you so much. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak to Dr. Kudjo or to just make comments. I am Jamaican, but I'm a Caribbean woman. And all that he said, I so totally agree with. And I want to point out two things. Number one, the UK, then UK Prime Minister Cameron, who it is said his family or his lineage that they benefited handsomely from slaveholding, from profit. Right. He came to Jamaica years ago and offered, in response to the request or the suggestion that we deserve reparation, he offered a jail. And this is, with all of the I'm telling you,
hello?
All the Windrush, all
yes,
the people
there.
Who, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry. All
yes.
the people who answered the call of Britain to go there and work, the Windrush generation, they have been so oppressed. They have been deported in mass to countries they don't even know. Some of them were born in the UK. It is vile. And it's time that a concentrated effort, and Professor Kudjo, thank you so much for your work, because we need to expose and repair. Okay.
Jennifer, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much. We've only got about a minute left in the segment. Yeah. Professor, is there any political appetite for this in the UK?
Well, we must make them have the appetite. Just one thing in terms of the Barbados situation and Codrington, from which you're at Codrington College, that we are the ones who, in terms of the Oxford All Souls College in Oxford, produced and supplemented money for that. We supplemented money for Glasgow in terms of the college there. And even from Antigua, the great Harvard, one of the chief benefactors was an Antiguan. So we in the Caribbean have done a lot even to produce and promote civilization in these countries, and that is something we must look at in terms of how we begin to repair and repay what has been lost.
And we leave it there with Professor Selwyn Kudjo, Professor of Africana Studies and Comparative Literature at Wellesley, and author most recently of The Slave Master of Trinidad, right?
Yes, sir. You got it right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on with us. We really appreciate your insight. A lot of people learned a lot of new things. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Brian. Thanks again for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.